Hi, this is Cricket.
This is Mimi.
And we're here with...
Wes Charlton.
So how are you?
I'm doing well. I'm doing better. This has been a good day. And a slew of...
Better than
ups
what?
And downs. Better than what? Mm. Finding out that both my front brake pads went to brake pad heaven and were non-existent.
Right.
And that my brake pistons were shot. And if I had driven my car probably one more mile, I probably would have been dead. And seeing as I'm driving to Atlanta and Florida this weekend, I'm doing better now that I know that my car's back.
You're playing
in
shows down there?
I am.
Where?
CJ's Landing in Atlanta, and I'm playing at The Social in Orlando, Florida, opening for John Frank.
I don't know who John Frank is.
He's a singer-songwriter from Florida. He came through town, we opened for him, and a few of my songs really caught him, and he vowed that he would have me down to Florida, come
nice.
Hell or high water.
He's from Orlando, or...?
I assume so. That's where he's at now. But I haven't read the John Frank bio yet. Amazon has been slow.
You're in fact failing the test.
Yeah. Yeah, thank you, Amazon.com. You said it was going to come 2 days ago. John Frank, the unauthorized biography.
So I heard you played a show last night at Belmont.
I did.
Why don't you tell the good people what Belmont is?
Belmont is a religiously affiliated college here in Nashville, Tennessee.
Known for...
Baptists.
Music was what I was telling you.
Oh. They do have a music school.
Yes.
They do have a music school.
But apparently they also have Baptists there.
Well, it's funny you should mention that, Mimi. They have Baptists and musicians at Belmont, which is what some might call a perfect meeting of both worlds. For me, myself, particularly, it was a bit of a minefield, you could say. I had to sign a waiver before I played that said that I couldn't reference any songs that had anything to do with cursing, drinking, drugs, sex, or religion. I knew that I could pull up my Menudo covers, and I knew they were going to be okay with my Creed. I do a Creed song sometimes, a cappella usually, with a xylophone.
I knew it was a joke already, but maybe other people would have.
No, it was interesting. So,
he's wearing a Creed t-shirt right now.
That's right. But it was interesting. It was a good show. It's hard to play some places that don't really give a license. I mean, I ended up just singing about what I usually sing about anyway, so I don't know if I'll be asked back. I mean, because a lot of the things that I deal with, at least in my life, aren't, you know...
Family-friendly?
It's not the Disney Channel, really.
No.
There was definitely periods of time between, you know, get no jobs and I had to pay rent and all my DVDs.
Yeah, we wouldn't know anything about that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. My parents still know that I sold their iPod. My iPod.
Hopefully your parents aren't listening to this.
Oh, they will. I have a sneaking suspicion that they do already know that.
We don't know anything about poverty because you probably don't know this, but Cricket is actually the cousin of the Sultan of Brunei.
I did know that, actually. Yeah. Yeah, that was on the extended bio link page. Check that out.
You want to play us a song?
Was there anything you guys wanted to hear in particular?
I'm trying to space it out evenly so it's not 30 minutes of talking.
Okay, well, you have to play your song. It was on TV.
Play my song. It was on TV.
You don't have to play it first.
Wes had a song. It was on TV. Mm-hmm.
I had a song that was on TV.
And it wasn't the Nashville Public Access Tunnel.
That's right. I'm living the big life now, kids. I'll just go ahead and get it out of the way. I'll just
do
that one.
All right, do that one.
Okay. And this is a song I wrote about where I'm from in Virginia. And it's called To Be Found. I actually don't play this song ever. Because I wrote it in like 5 minutes. And then it was the one that got picked up.
That always
and I never do it live.
All
right. Okay.
Just remember, we only have like 13 hours of recording time here.
Okay, I'll skip the bridge then. There's a town where nobody knows me. There's a sign leading the way. There's a church with a mighty high steeple where the people in the
town go to pray. Take me down, I'm lost and I need to be found. The hills that roll by the river next to the shackles and bars, all the lovers and liars are married under the straps and the stars. Take me down, I'm lost.
You've just set a standard for yourself where if that's what you throw together in 5 minutes, you'll have to then prove that everything else is much better.
Well, thanks, guys.
He has a song on a napkin over there.
Yes.
Do I?
Yeah. That he left here.
Oh, yeah. Well, I heard that everybody had to leave something here, so I left.
Oh, I told her that we should keep it. She was going to try to give it back to you.
That's what I left for you all.
All right, awesome, because the song is actually pretty good.
So tell us about getting a song on TV. Is it like some dude just shows up at your door in a little TV suit, and it's like, I'm the TV dude, and I'm taking your song for TV.
Or he looks like the TiVo.
Oh yeah, the little TiVo thing shows up at your door?
Yeah, it's a little guy. He's small. And LP, is it politically correct? Little person?
Yeah.
I know that because I...
Used to be midgets?
Yeah, well, I am fairly... I unfairly pointed out a midget on the street corner to my girlfriend when we were driving by, because I was...
You got a midget beatdown, or what?
Yeah, she totally administered, like, a verbal midget beatdown to me. It was kind of like, you know...
They prefer the term.
They prefer the term LP, and I said, I don't even know what that means.
Lumbar puncture?
Yeah. Right.
Long play it.
And I was like, lollipop? I don't know what you're talking about. And she said, no, little person. And I said, how can little person be better than midget?
Or, I didn't get that either.
No. And then I asked her if that meant that we were BPs, if we were big people. And she said, don't be smart. And I said, I'm not trying to be smart. I'm just trying to figure out if where I stand in the scheme of people and sizes.
I still don't know. Big person, because you're pretty tall.
I know.
Although we think everybody's tall,
so we're not very tall. So.
Well, I was saying that with Ryan from the Big Trollers the other night, and he's actually taller than me. I'm like 6'2 and a half, 6'3, and this cat's like 6'5, and it's very unnerving to be around people that are taller than me.
I actually have that
experience. I am the tallest person all the time.
Shorter people.
I have that experience with people shorter than me because there's not very many of them. And yeah. I always feel like, whoa, wait, what's this?
I'm looking down on you, how strange.
Moving to Alice in Wonderland world. What did I drink last night?
That's when the absinthe pays off. I have a good absinthe story, by the way.
Well, tell us your absinthe story.
Well,
does it involve sentient wolves?
It involves Joseph and the Technicolor Dreamcoat, actually. I was in England.
Okay.
I was in England with my girlfriend's a dual citizen, and her mom is full-blown British, and so they invited me to go along one summer for like 2 weeks, and so we're over there, and every day it was very much like family stuff going on. That was cool. I went to Ladies. I don't want Minnie to hurt herself.
Bracelet caught in my hair.
All right, I'll edit that out. So,
Wait until I get to the good part.
So you were in England.
So fun, after about like a week of like doing really fun stuff or whatever, but my lady friend was like, yeah, today is your day. You can go off, and we were in London. You're free to go and just do whatever you want. So I went to the closest liquor store, and I said, dude, I got a little bit of extra, some extra pounds, if you will, and I'd like to buy a bottle of absinthe. And he said, sir, you and I both know that absinthe is illegal in the UK. And I said, dude, you and I both know that you have a bottle of absinthe underneath that counter right there. And he kind of looked around, and he said, all right. So I got a bottle of absinthe, and I wanted to do the whole melting the sugar cube thing over it. I got back to the house.
Did you get a beret first?
Right. No, but I did buy a thin Sharpie, yeah. And I drew a mustache on myself. And I actually did, this is true actually, I went and I rented from the local video store Francis Ford Coppola's Dracula. And
that was my wolf joke from earlier.
Yeah, I thought this was going to be pretty sweet though. And so I couldn't find any sugar cubes or matches for that matter or anything. Or
don't those weirdos drink sugar cubes in their tea?
Yeah, I don't know. Whatever. There's sugar triangles. I don't know. But there's no serrated spoon or anything to like do the melty sugar thing. So I got the absinthe, which is actually green. Mm-hmm. And then I mixed it with some water and it turned blue. And then I just took a sugar packet like for coffee and I poured it in there and I mixed it around. And I drank about four of those. I drank about half the bottle because I didn't really know what I was doing.
Oh, dear.
And there's a scene in the movie where, like, a wolf comes in through a window.
You're serious about the wolf? The Dracula
serious.
Movie.
No, and, like, it's nighttime, and Coppola puts a blue filter on. Mm-hmm. And so I'm looking at the screen, everything's blue, then I look out to the room that we're sitting in, and the room is
blue.
At which point, said girlfriend comes in and announces, are you ready to go? And I say, go where? And she says, I told you a million times, we're all going to the theater to see Joseph and Technicolor Dreamcoat in 5 minutes. And I said, fuck. And
because what else are you going to say? Really?
What else are you
like
say
that?
when the room's blue and you've just drank half a bottle of absinthe? So I went and sat, and they had like third row from the front seats, and it was so technicolored out, and the lead, I think, was actually the understudy. So, you know, he was trying way too hard. He was like, ah, like in your face. Like, I can't remember any of the songs. And I started kind of freaking out. And luckily, when I was freaking out, it happened right in intermission. And the one thing that I learned about the UK theaters is that in the middle of all this, in the intermission, like at a baseball game in the States, you know, it's like they got hot dog people or chips or beer. Well, they had like frozen ice cream sandwich people. We were walking up and down the aisles with these trays of frozen ice cream sandwiches. And I grabbed like two of them and ate them both really fast. And for some reason, they kind of like
settled
the absinthe raging inside of me. And I made it through the end of
it. That's a tip for you kids at home. When you're freaking out on absinthe, get ice cream sandwiches.
But really, if you're freaking out any substance, ice cream sandwiches usually are pretty good to quell the demons inside of you.
Absinthe is legal in Canada if you ever want to not have to travel across the ocean.
Is it like absinthe with an E or without an E?
It's the real stuff.
The real deal? The,
yeah.
The wormwood?
Yeah.
Like, I'm going to cut my ear off and go paint Starry
yeah.
Night stuff?
Yes.
Sweet. You want to road trip it up there sometime?
Maybe we can get somebody to send it in the mail.
Yeah, we've
had really good luck with things being sent in the mail from Canada lately.
Yeah, the customs has detained a birthday package of mine because it has 30 boxes of Kraft dinner in it.
Nice.
And I guess that is like on terrorist watch list or something.
Kraft.
Yeah, don't send any kind of macaroni and cheese product in the mail.
Even if it's like the dry cheese? Because
yeah,
I understand like
the
liquid,
cheese.
Like if it was like the Velveeta shells, you know,
no,
like the
cheese
sauce, that's liquid. I could see the terrorists jumping on that Velveeta wagon. The powdered Kraft?
Yeah.
Really?
I know. It's a tragedy.
But just in case you were wondering, the Kraft macaroni and cheese in Canada is different than
it's
the Kraft.
It's completely different. That's why I actually have to have it sent in the mail today.
Like the white cheddar is actually white cheddar?
No, I mean like the actual, I can't believe we're discussing this. The actual noodles are not the same consistency or made with the same way.
What are they made with? Cat gut?
I don't know, maybe beaver ass?
Beaver ass?
Yeah.
Beaver ass is not as tough. It's actually more lean than you think. I've had it before with some otter.
Yeah, when you were like in a canoe one time.
When I was in a canoe drinking absinthe, yeah.
So this means that when you force me to go canoeing this summer, we're going to make Wes and his girl go with us because...
That's right. And we can drink warm wood and...
In the canoe!
In the canoe!
Awesome.
It'll be great.
I'm really good. I think I exceed the height limitation requirements, but I could be the coxswain. I'm really good at, like, I could call out the strokes for you guys.
You say you're too tall to row.
I'm saying I'm too lazy to row.
And
I'm too tall to be a coxswain, but I'll be the best damn coxswain.
We'll put you in an inner tube and tow you behind the boat.
That sounds just about right.
With the beer, because you've got to strap the beer in the
cooler in the
yeah.
river. Yeah.
Yeah, and we can reenact some like really lame football thing every like 5 minutes when you want a beer, and I can be like, go long.
And then we lose all the beer into the river. Because
yeah. I'm a terrible quarterback, I know.
No,
you catch. No, we won.
You don't have to worry about that, though, with me, though, because I grew up on the river in Virginia, on the Rappahannock River. And
is that a famous river? Or?
Well, it's a tributary to the Chesapeake Bay. And the Rappahannock River. I don't know if you call it famous. It's you know, I grew up in a real like it's a waterman community, very blue collar. Very much everybody kind of makes their living with skiffs on the bay crabbing.
Skiffs,
flat bottom boats.
That's a thing that people actually still have to this day. Huh?
Absolutely.
Yeah,
because you don't want to create too much of a wake to scare away all of the potential victims. I'm sorry, did I say that? Who do you think would win a fight, a logger or a crabber?
Interestingly enough, where I come from, there's both loggers and crabbers.
Have you ever seen two of them get
and
a fight?
And gooey duckers.
And gooey duckers, yes. I don't think that's what they call themselves, though.
Gooey deckers?
You know what a gooey deck is?
A gooey deck?
The giant clam that's about this big.
Yeah?
It's way bigger than that.
Well, on average, they're about this big. They get
just
really
for all
big.
You listeners, Cricket just made the size of a regulation-sized rugby ball.
Yeah, that's just about right.
That up.
That's just about
just
right.
So you can visualize what's going on right now.
But everybody who listens to our podcast knows what a gooey duck is because we talk about it all the time.
Oh, okay.
It's this, like, giant clam thing.
But you know how clams have the little necks that come out?
Oh, yeah.
Well, imagine if it's this big.
Okay.
So it's this, like, absurdly phallic thing.
It's this ridiculous animal.
Wow.
And was also the mascot for my college. So.
That sounds horrifying. I had one I wanted to try and do. It's like an old one. I mean, would that be really unprofessional of me?
You know what? We have prided ourselves on being the least professional journalists in all of Nashville.
Cool. I can totally get into that. I like this song, though. It's called Pop Song 99. I was going through a really bad period and like I had this terrible dream and I woke up though with like all of these words. I went downstairs and I like wrote it out and
you haven't told the people about your REM fixation.
I haven't. I don't think I'm going to. But yes, Pop Song 99 is indeed a reference to Pop Song 89.
record was playing, singers were saying words I was praying you would hold close to your heart. But things fall apart. You rolled off the bed, said the moment was dead. I forgot to breathe as I skipped to the part where you leave. Things fall apart. You said it was so predictable, like that turning turntable. Every song ends, it's how we live our own lives. Not some singer's lies about love. So we split up and set out to start our own lives, to feel with our own hearts, see with our own eyes, the fire in the streets, the blood in the sky. And you cried when I lied about the things that I tried, when I went away, but you kept your tongue tied. You kept a good lid on the secrets you sold to the boy that would hold you when I went away. Things fall apart and I want you to stay. Stay with me. But I see you in the people passing in the streets, all staring at their feet. Things fall apart, but we mend them with glue in our hearts. Just tell me what to do. So I tried to conceive of a lover who wouldn't need things like a soul or stability, but I ended up a wreck on the phone talking to you. And I cut up the context, spoke to you in metaphors. You said come over, but you must sleep on the floor. I pointed to your bed and I asked you, what is that for? I'll never forget the way you looked at me. You said beds are for people with genuine needs, like love and sex and death on TV and their gods above. And I pulled up my blanket and I turned to the wall, and I dreamt of a better place, a better way to fall, and for people to say at their feet. Things fall apart. with glue in our hearts. Just tell me what to do. You gotta believe. The worst is.
Because Mimi tells me I sound insincere even when I don't mean to. And I definitely want to sound genuine right now, but I feel that we haven't properly fawned all over you for how good your lyric writing is.
Well, thanks, Cricket.
Yeah, you're really amazing.
Thanks.
But okay, this is important.
Feels
the,
good
the
to hear that, because, you know, people...
You downloaded this off iTunes or whatever. The thing is that go and buy this guy's record... Because not only is he that good, he's a really nice guy. So you want to give him some money.
I actually don't even have TV. In fact, when my song was on the TV, I had to have a friend TiVo it for me. Because I haven't had working TV in about 3 years. I have a TV, but we watch movies on it. I haven't seen TV in a long time. TV has really passed me by. I went for 1 year without it, and then I went and watched some TV with some friends, and I just... felt like I was going to have a seizure or something, and I've never even had a seizure, and I don't know what I feel like to
have my old lady moment now where I say, when I was your age, I actually went through a period for like 4 years where I didn't watch any movies and I didn't watch any TV. And yeah. I actually missed a bunch of movies. People are always like, what? You've never seen that movie? But now I have realized the cuddly comfort blanket of hot guys with tight abs that tell me it really is. So,
otherwise known as Smallville.
And Friday Night Lights.
Is Smallville still on?
Yes.
Dude. Contrary to popular opinion, I was Superman between the ages of 4 and 7. So,
oh, really?
Yeah. Yeah, my underwear
Supergirl,
sets
I
out.
Have pictures.
Yeah? I have the ruins of villains' lives in the palm of my hand.
And also Wonder Woman for a long time.
Me too, but I didn't want to bring that up. You know,
you still have the
underoos,
don't you?
I do have the underoos. But no, is it Lana Lang in the Smallville?
Yeah.
It's Lana Lang. It's not the other one, right?
Not Lois Lane.
She's freaking hot. Who is that? Where is she? Like, that's what's wrong with the WB. It's like Lana Lang would ever really be that hot.
Well, we actually, I think, had both pretty much stopped watching it. And then this season, they introduced the Green Arrow as a character.
Who have you ever read comics growing up? Is like the most awesome ever.
Green Arrow is badass.
He's my favorite comic.
You know why he was badass? Because he was kind of like high demand, like, but never there. Like, everybody loved him, but it's like he was hard to find a good strip on him. If you were like into the action figures, it's like, good luck finding the Green Arrow. And they were out there. Trust me. I know about this.
Well, Kevin Smith relaunched the book, and so it like changed.
I thought he was supposed to be in charge of the movie, but then he backed out. Isn't that right?
What was he doing?
It was Green Arrow.
As a movie?
Green, yeah.
No, I think he is working for Marvel now, isn't he?
Yeah, he is working for Marvel.
Yeah, he's working for Marvel now. He was scripted to write, actually, the Superman movie that was made. That one that came out last year.
Right.
And then it was this whole fiasco. He's actually got a documentary film about it. About
I want to see that.
Utterly ridiculous it all was.
That movie was really boring.
Really? I really liked it.
I didn't. I don't like superhero movies very much anymore.
Character.
But Superman was really hot.
He was really hot.
See, I can't go there with y'all. I mean, I think it was just boring.
Yeah.
Really.
Superman is boring in general, though.
No, not the first one with Brando. Like, that one kicks ass. Even the third one? Wait. Is it the second or third one with Richard Pryor?
I have no idea.
It is, man. I bought that shit on the corner down in St. Mark's Place when I was up in New York playing a show.
Awesome.
Just because it's Superman carrying Richard Pryor. And he's just like, I'm on fire! And you're like, great, Superman's going to save him.
Are you sure this wasn't an absinthe hallucination? I have no idea what you're talking about.
Are you serious? The Richard Donner movies? Y'all need to check your facts on some superhero movies. Although, you know what the most underrated superhero movie of all time is? Darkman. Ever seen it?
Yes, I have.
It's pretty sweet. Liam Neeson. Mm-hmm. Pre Roy Roberts.
Rob Roy.
I like Roy Roberts. I should have been called that. It's a better name.
Yeah, well, it was based on an actual historical figure, so.
Well, I mean, so was so was Braveheart.
Yeah.
But we all know.
We all know they didn't have enough yards of fabric in their kilts in that movie.
That's true.
Oh my God, says this Scottish person. Scotland forever, bitches.
Well, let's see here. Alright, I'll do this one. This song is called Red Eyes, Blue Lights, and it just got picked up by Illumina Records for a bit of a campaign they're doing.
A campaign? What does that mean? You're going to be advertising cars with your songs?
They are actually, well, I like to have a good time as much as the next person, but my best friend actually died in a single car drinking and driving accident like less than a year after we graduated together from high school. And they approached me and they're just like, we heard your song. This is from the album, the new album that's not even out yet. And they wanted to know if they could use it as like a prominent thing for an anti-drinking and driving campaign. And I said, it's not anti-drinking, right? And they said, no, it's not anti-drinking.
Just anti-drinking and driving.
And it's going to be going out to about 500,000 people. It's very exciting. This is the song. Asleep at the wheel again, lost another friend to the end. Ashes blow across a backyard while I wonder how I am still alive. Days fall away like tears, but I won't follow my fears, and though I'm alone, I would like to be alone with you. So here's to everything that gets us by. Here's to the kids and the grooms and brides, husbands and wives, houses of lies. Here's to everyone I've ever known. From a life I call my own. Waking up with a light in my eye, a couple of cops and an alibi. They say, son, you didn't get too far tonight. So I made it home on account of a friend, and we ain't met our own ends yet. But when we do, I'll meet him up in the sky, not before we say goodbye to all of the things that get us high, to all of the kids and the grooms and brides, husbands and wives, houses of lies. Here's to everyone I've ever. If I call my own. Life goes by so fast. Make it last. Raise your
from a life I call my own. That's a song from my new album, World on Fire, and it's an album I've been trying to make for almost a year now. It has involved very shady indie record labels and record label presidents and drug habits and
Let's, first though, it comes out soon though. When does it come out?
Comes out in about 3 weeks.
And it'll be on CD Baby or?
It'll be on CD Baby, iTunes, Miles of Music, all the same places that my first album, American Bittersweet, is.
So tell us about your indie record label. Very interesting.
I'm first going to tell you that the artwork on your first album, the actual, is really cute.
It's like
all the little pictures on the bottom.
Yeah, we're trying to do kind of an Andy Warhol kind of pop art thing. But a lot of that credit, I designed the album cover for American Bittersweet, but the rest of it was all my friend Megan Gurley, who sings on To Be Found, the song that was on the TV. Beautiful voice, and she did all that art direction herself, and she's very good.
So you had issues with your record.
Well, I released American Bittersweet. I started my own record label. I actually released my very first recording when I was 18. Was my first EP called Pictures in Empty Glass. I got it registered with ASCAP and started my own publishing company. And I was a member of ASCAP through as a writer and a publisher. And
Les, what is ASCAP?
It's it's actually
You totally know the effect of that.
It's about a yay-sized baseball helmet that you can sit on. So far, it's about all they've really done for me. I take that back.
It stands for American Songwriter or something. What does it stand for?
Cap. I don't know. I don't really know what it stands for.
I think everybody listening to this knows what ASCAP is.
No, yeah, I bet
we all know what ASCAP is.
Okay, whatever. They're a bunch of wankers. All right,
go ahead. They collect the money. They're the revenue police. I started my own publishing company, End of the Road Publishing, to release my first EP when I was 18. And so when that album came out, it said End of the Road, an End of the Road production. I know that all sounds kind of trivial, but when I released my full length, my debut full length, American Bittersweet, 2 years later, I decided to go ahead. By that time, I had gotten some management out of New York City. We decided together that I should just go ahead and start my own record label, End of the Road Records, and release it as such. Did that. It was very cool. I mean, I'm my own president. I have my own record label. But this time around, World on Fire is going to be released as, right now, it's going to be released as End of the Road Records. We're talking to some people, some other labels. Hopefully it'll kind of get picked up and then shot back out.
Distribution-wise?
Well, probably more like what I'm looking for more is more of a licensing deal. White Stripes to V2 type relationship. Just license out our album to a label and have them distribute it and work with us and whatnot. But when I moved to Nashville after I released American Bittersweet, it got a lot of critical attention and got me... And I played the Americana Music Conference in Nashville. And it was the summer after it came out, and I played the Midwest Music Summit and met a lot of people from Nashville that were in the scene here, some of the No Depression people and some of the Sin City people. And I just so happened to be playing the Americana Conference a couple weeks later, so we all kind of hooked up again together, and I played The Exit in the night before I was supposed to do my big showcase at the National Convention Center. Got really, really way too drunk, but I made it to my thing the next morning, and it all worked out. It kind of brought me to Nashville, but when I came to Nashville, I mean, I lucked out. I was very lucky. I didn't have a place to stay. And I showed up in town, and my friend Sean Katz was like, "You need a place to stay?" I said, "Well, I was planning on sleeping in my car for the first couple of nights." And he said, "Well, let me make a call." He ends up hooking me up with one of his friends, Lisa York, who's a film person, vouches for me. And she's going out of town for a week. So the day I get into town, I get to like crash at her house for a week, house sitting. So I find a job in a place. And I actually found a place to live and a job. But I was completely broke. I mean, just living on $400 a month from waiting tables. Sometimes it was $300 a month, and that's where selling stuff came in, like selling computers and books and
crack
records and meth.
Your body.
Yeah. my dignity. My right and left hand.
he plays guitar with his feet, actually. Yeah. It's really impressive.
It's true. There's actually a guy in town that does that. It's pretty cool. It's a true story. But so, I mean, and I, by this point in time, I'm always about 2 or 3 albums ahead of myself. Like, by the time American Bursary actually came out, I already had, like, another album. And then I moved to Nashville, and just geography itself is enough that makes, to make me, like, I mean, I write anyways, but whenever I travel or go someplace new, that really seems to bring out the best songs in me. And so moving to Nashville is just, like, now I'm, like, I got a whole nother album, and I was doing it solo performances, and Mark Winter from Americana Tonight, which is a showcase here in town, had me on there a bunch of times because he saw me at the Americana conference and basically was like, dude, if you can get a band together, you know, you can headline. So I called up a bunch of friends from Virginia and they all just kind of came out and just moved in with me, and we put together my first of many band lineups that I've had since living here in Nashville, but that was my first band lineup, and we had our first show, and I had met this indie label called White Cherry Records, and I don't think they're together anymore. Anyways, I hit it off with the band, who's a very incredibly kick-ass band, Always Seabees, who was like the main band on that label. And I hit it off with the president of the label. We'll just call him the president of the label.
To protect his identity.
And they had been really into.
I have a feeling there's going to be coke and hookers in this story.
And balloons and a magician who's drunk. We hit off and they really wanted me to come out to like see their space, like their studio, and I did. It was great and very cool. So anyways, when it came time to like our first show, band show with this lineup, I really wanted to record a rehearsal so we could like listen back and see what we had to do better or do worse. And so I called up the president of White Cherry and said, hey man, can we come in and just do a rehearsal in your studio and you just record it live and we'll listen back. So it turned into this really cool party where, like, you know, we're in the studio and we're playing live, and the Always Seabees were there and like all these other bands were there, and just everybody's hanging out and drinking, and we're just rehearsing and recording. And next thing you know, by the end of the night, the president of White Cherry Records is saying, you know, when's White Cherry gonna release your album? And I was like, let's talk. And next thing you know, a couple weeks later, it's like we're demoing the album with White Chariot, and business plans are drawn up and budgets and whatnot, and I, by the time I become friends with Ken Coomer, who used to drum for Uncle Tupelo and Wilco, and he's a producer now, and he was very interested. He basically signed on to produce the album at 16 Ton Studios in town, and we had the time booked. And about a week before, the president of White Cherry Records disappears and isn't returning any phone calls, and Ken's calling me and, dude, where's Bloop? And I'm like, dude, I don't know where Bloop is. And 3 weeks later, after Ken's gotten really pissed off, and I'm really pissed off, and we've lost the time of 16 Ton, Ken's pissed because it makes him look bad, and I'm pissed because it makes me look bad, the president of White Chair Records resurfaces, and I'm like, dude, I'm trying to be nice, and I'm just like, where the fuck were you? Like, do you not know we're supposed to have an album recorded? And he's like, dude, I've been in Alabama for like 3 weeks.
Yes!
And he basically gone on like a coke bender in
Alabama.
Yeah, in Alabama.
At least the blow is cheap there.
An Alabama coke bender, and
no, I wouldn't know anything. I don't know why you assumed I would know.
Oh, it's good. It's the good southern dirt down there. No, and he was just like, I lost all my investors. We lost all the money for the record label. Maybe sometime next year around January, like now. You can start maybe thinking about doing it. And I was just like, no, man, I'm going to walk. So that was the first attempt. We demoed out the entire album. And then I'm kind of like reeling from this because like the album's ready to go, but we have no money. This is why we're like looking for other...
Wow, who knew that people in Nashville were so unprofessional?
Yeah, go figure. So we have no money, and that's the main reason why we just didn't do it ourselves. I talked to this other producer who had seen me on a radio show when I first moved to town. He had expressed interest, and basically I said, let's cut an album, you release it, you own the masters, but you finance it, we record half the album with him, and then Shady Tim, who I will refer to him as out of nowhere, shuts down everything and says, we can't go any further until you sign this. And I said, well, I knew we had to sign some stuff, so that's fine. And I look at it and I say, but Tim, you're asking for 25% of my songwriting publishing. And he says, just a little sweat off my brow, unless, you know, it doesn't mean anything unless, you know, something happens. And I said, I know, Tim, obviously. And I said, let me think about this. And so we took it to a lawyer, and the lawyer looked at it and said, what's he going to do for you? And I said, he said he's going to give us a website and streaming audio and put us in the local artist section at the Barnes & Noble on West End Avenue. And he said,
which you can do yourself.
I already have my website. I have international distribution online, streaming audio. I have a MySpace page. And, you know, it was kind of like a bum deal. So he told me we weren't going to do it. And then he ended up locking us out of the studio. And he had, like, over $1,000 worth of our drummer's equipment in the studio. And he wouldn't let us in for a month. He actually, like, locked us out. We had to call the cops on him. Report, like, stolen stuff, and it was bad. Finally got that back, so that was round two, trying to get the album made. And so finally at that point, it's just like, I'm just despondent, like, how am I going to do this? My drummer goes, well, I got this digital 16 track, and he works for AKG, which is a music company, and he's like, I got these really good microphones that I can take from the company, and these preamps, and all this, like, really high-end equipment. So over margaritas, 60-ounce margaritas at La Hacienda, best Mexican restaurant in Nashville. 60 margaritas, not 16. They look like fish bowls. Have you all been there before?
Yeah.
That's awesome. Anyways, the quesadillas are awesome. But
the quesadillas and the margaritas.
Over margaritas, fishbowl margaritas, we decide, fuck it, let's just do it ourselves. And we, so The World on Fire is coming out. I can't tell you how proud I am of it. We did the entire thing in our house.
Which we encourage everyone to do.
We were listening to lots of Exile on Main Street, lots of Swordfish Trombones, Distill, you know, that type of stuff. And just, we got great sounds. I mean, we used our house and we used mics and we just got very experimental with it. And then our ace up our sleeve was we record the entire thing for $0.
Right.
And we had like a couple hundred dollars. And we got Fred Kevorkian, who's the most brilliant sound audio engineer mastering guy who's done Lou Reed, The White Stripes, The Stones. He just recently did the Willie Nelson Songbird album to master it. And Roy Henderson from Avatar Studios mixed it. So that's kind of where we put the little bit of money we have. Turned out pretty awesome.
Pretty awesome.
Pretty freaking awesome. I mean, I don't feel bad saying this. It's definitely one of the most exciting, like, fresh sounding albums that I've heard.
How dare
in
you
a
promote
long time.
Yourself on this podcast?
I'll promote the shit out of myself. you know why I'll say that? Because driving around Nashville is supposed to be like the oasis in the desert of original music.
And we all know that it's not.
No, it's not.
Of actually giving music being given a shot, like Lightning 100. You hear about local artists, unsigned artists being played on Lightning 100. And it just sounds like the next fray waiting to happen or something, you know? And this doesn't sound like that. This sounds like your favorite record that nobody knew about. Which is great, in my opinion.
Which, when it comes out, we'll be reviewing it on the site.
So I could be eating my words, but I don't think I will be. It's pretty freaking awesome, and I'm very proud of it, because American Berry Sweet I'm very proud of as well, but that was a very professional album. I co-produced that album, but with a very professional producer, Stuart Myers, and Chris Coyp, who worked with Jason Mraz, Jonathan Rice.
It had a much poppier sound than I thought it was going to.
Well, it's very, these guys are like almost too good. You know what I mean? Like, they make commercial albums.
Yeah, your first album's definitely slick.
Could you hear, like, a little bit of underlying tension between the material and the production? I mean, there's certain moments where
it
kind of...
listen to it one time, to be perfectly honest with you. So.
That's okay. I mean, go back and listen to, like, the first track, and then listen to the last track. That's all listen to Light Pollution, which is the one that I completely produced myself, and then listen to, like, maybe a song called, like Clementine. And you've got two very different things happening.
Let's hear another song off your new album.
Okay, this is called Change Will Come. This is going to be the last song on World on Fire.
Autumn on the tip of your tongue, pray for the dead. Pray a change is gonna come round again. You ask me, so I answer. Yes, I'm just a boy and my wings are made of wax. How about yours? Well, never mind the poetry. Get me to a plane that I can fly. Rise above the lies, to rise above the war, to rise above the pain, to rise above the more and more and more. Haven't we been here before? Snowfall skeletons appear like a postcard from the afterlife. They remind us why we're still here. They say they saw a city fall, saw the world turn a day at a time. Saw religion turn to myth, saw it die quick with a kiss. And Shakespeare's at the bar, drinking with a movie star, who says he'll be president someday. And the poet drinks it down, looking like King Lear's crown. He says, hey man, you already own this town. And I know your story well. Every heaven has a hell. We've got cities in the sea, earthquake California dreams. And could you drive me to the station? Could you put me on a train out of here? Or better tie me to the tracks. Make a wish, don't look back. For tomorrow is just a day away. And I feel that I feel that I've been here before.
You, but anybody that references King Lear in a song, I think shoots straight right at our
in religion in one song.
Yes,
very nice. Good job.
Thanks. You know those days where you wake up and you just feel
you
like
just think
feel
about,
like King Lear's crown, right? You know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, I totally have those days.
You always sound so insincere.
Well, in all honesty, my days are mostly Ophelia days, if we really want to get all Shakespearean about
That's
it.
That's true.
So.
You're definitely usually flinging yourself around and, like, jumping off bridges.
Yeah.
Lamenting flowers and,
yeah. Getting into playing more music.
What kind of Steve Earle pepper is he going to play?
I guess he didn't tell me
oh,
what
it's
he was
actually
saying.
Like Tennessee raining.
Yeah, now. It was lightning, actually,
earlier. Yeah, I heard the thunder.
This is another song off my new album. This is called Southern Comfort. She tastes like cigarettes on a bottle of regret. regret. I could use some southern comfort. Oh my God, we just met. You see, I've got this curse. It's only getting worse. It keeps me coming back, even though I know it's gonna hurt. In a way, it's the best I've ever known. Pain I feel is real enough. It's a light on the love I've been shown. In a way, it's the best I've ever known. Here I starting at the end. I know this won't last. She needs a man, I need a friend. In a way, it's the best I've ever known. Pain I feel is real enough. It's a lot on the love I've been shown. In a way, it's the best I've ever.
Especially since it hasn't been storm season for a while. This is the first time in a while we've had our daily dose of thunder.
Mm-hmm. So I guess you've been compared to Ryan Adams by other people, not me, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
By people that are not.
That's correct, Mimi. Yep, there's been a few of those. I fucking dig Ryan Adams. I think he's a great songwriter.
I think the beginning of that song sounded like Whiskey Town, but that I would say that after really start kicking in with the lyrics, it sounds mid-career Ryan Adams.
Yeah, but you know, it's like, I remember I read this, or not read, I mean, I actually heard this interview with Ryan Adams on Fresh Air, and they're like,
Wank Fest of the Year.
Right? But they were playing Answering Bells when Gold came out, and they're like, well, we hear a bit of the band in here, and it's kind of like, if somebody compares you to Ryan Adams or Whiskey Town, it's kind of like you're basically just being compared to like good music.
Right.
So I don't ever get that.
It's your actual vocal delivery.
I'll take that as a compliment because I'll be completely dead honest with you. Like, there's a lot of really good performers and singer songwriters and just musicians out there who are kick ass singers, and I'm not a trained singer, you know what I mean? Like, I kinda go there, and after years of doing that, I've learned how to like not hit really bad notes, because for a long time there, I mean, like, my best friends would be like, no, you have to listen to Wes. No, he writes these amazing songs, and he's great. I mean, he doesn't always sing on key, but he means it, man. Like, well, thanks, guys. You know, like, sometimes people will say there's two types of people. There's the Beatles fans and the Rolling Stones fans, and I just happen to kind of like both of them. And it sort of explains where I come down on singing. It's just, I really get off on incredibly good singing. You know, like John Lennon, and I mentioned Hank Williams and Jeff Buckley in the same sentence, because talk about two of the most brilliantly emotive singers ever.
Right.
Aretha Franklin, I mean, Otis Redding, I mean, these are like singers that are just like Alex Chilton and Chris Bell from, you know, Big Star. And, like, that shit's unbelievable. The problem I have these days is that, like, you know, it's hard to know who's a good singer and who's not. Even if you are a good singer, if you're being commercially produced and
there's
put out,
there's so much shit on top of it.
Just like, you know, people. I mean, I worked at this. I work lots of really terrible side jobs. I was working at this one place called Fax Tax, and it was a terrible place. And there's a terrible woman named Lisa who worked there, and Lisa was trying to tell me how great Celine Dion was, and I was like, you know. She's like, well, and I was like, I can't really talk to you about Celine Dion, Lisa, because I don't really listen to Celine Dion. She's like, no, the thing about her is you just have to see her live.
Oh, that would totally sound
even if I liked Celine Dion and the songs that she rips off of poor struggling singer-songwriters and takes 50% of their music publishing, I'm sure that live, yes, I do get to see the full glory of her voice, and I'm sure it's brilliant and fantastic, but on an album, even if like the most brilliant singer, how can you know? And a perfect example of that with a guy that's like got total credibility, like Jim James, My Morning Jacket. I've seen My Morning Jacket live. I saw them before they broke big at like a 300 plus club called the Canal Club in Richmond before they broke big, and they were fucking awesome. And Jim James is fucking awesome. But when you listen to their albums, it's so just like, I think he's a really good singer. I think Tom York is a really good singer. But they're not the guys that, like, really get me off anymore in the way that, like, the old school cats did. Because back in the day, like, Aretha Franklin singing is Aretha Franklin singing. And that's it. And that's so badass. And, like, John Lennon. Even John Lennon, who had tons of shit put on his vocals. Like, Phil Spector would put, like, slapback and reverb and stuff. And even George Martin would put, like, throw John Lennon's vocals through a Leslie speaker. For some reason, it wasn't lost. It was still tangible. You could still, like, feel the pulse behind the voice. And so, I like really good singers, but I've kind of become, in this day and age, I've, like, more fallen in love with the singers who I believe. And for better...
Believe the emotion and the vocal delivery.
Not, like, yes, the emotion, but just everything. Just, like, maybe the fact that they're not perfect singers is why I like them. Because I know that what I paid for is what I'm getting. I'm not getting some other Fields
and Isaac Rock, the modest.
Right, like, I'm not getting some other person's agenda, some record label's agenda on what they think is top-down, marketable, good music. I'm getting someone that's trying their damnedest, their hardest, and for better or for worse, like, I will remember it. Maybe I'm biased because the one thing I can say about my voice is that, well, you'll always know it's me singing, you know what I mean? But, like, Tom Waits is a very extreme version of that. Like, you always know it's Tom Waits. But you also have people like Paul Westerberg. Like, nobody delivers a song better than Paul Westerberg on their album, Let It Be, The Replacements, you know? When he sings, like, How Do You Say Goodnight to an Answering Machine? I fucking believe him. And I know that feeling. And it's the way he sings it, you know what I mean? Like, he's not like some beautiful Irish tenor. Oh, did you guys know that James Joyce had a beautiful Irish tenor?
Yes,
and he was the second best singer in Ireland besides John McCormick. I learned that from my Shane McGowan biography. Shane McGowan is not a horrible singer. Shane McGowan is not. I would like another drink.
Keep talking.
But Shane McGowan is not a horrible singer. Shane McGowan is a fucking brilliant singer.
I say that with Ron Sodomy and the Lush being one of my all-time favorite albums.
Brilliant vocal deliveries on that album.
But, I mean, the thing is that he... I don't know. I would actually put him in the excruciating category.
No way. No way.
I don't... I would say Willie Nelson, though, is definitely what you're talking about.
No. Willie Nelson is too... No, Willie Nelson is... Willie Nelson's too good at... Willie Nelson knows what works for Willie Nelson, so he does it. The thing about Shane McGowan is he's too drunk to know it works for him, so he just goes there. Like, and that's, and those are the moments that I will take the excruciating Shane McGowan. I mean, well, I personally don't feel like there's any excruciating Shane McGowan moments. Like, Old Main Drag is probably in my top five favorite songs of all time. Not for the least of which, because I didn't know who the Pogues were when I first heard it, but I was a huge Gus Van Sant fan. And My Own Private Idaho continues to be probably my favorite movie of all time. And, you know, they're burying Bob at the end, and Bob, and all that shit. And then, like, you know, Old Main Drag comes on, and you're like, this is the most beautiful song I've ever heard. And
well,
he's talking about...
going to be more perfect in the moment. And yeah. The whole, like,
and he's talking about, like, buying drugs and getting kicked in the head by the coppers and, like, you know, turning chicks in the alley. I'm like, sign me up, because this sounds fucking great. Do you want to say something, Mimi?
You're going to do a Whiskey Town song, no?
Okay. I guess I'll do a Whiskey Town song. No, the cops here, they can run me to your house. Sometimes I sit and wish that I was somewhere else. So let's dim the daylights for the sweethearts that we are. Sometimes I sit and wish I was in your arms. And all the sweethearts of the world are out dancing in the places where me and all my friends go to hide our faces. Avenues run one way, streets they run the same. It's gonna take a lot of shit for me to stay away. No, the cops here, they can't take me to your house. I get directions and pretend I'm somewhere else. All the sweethearts of the world are out littering the bars, and I'm still avenues from any place you are. You know avenues run one way, streets they run the same. It's gonna take a lot of shit for me to stay away. Gonna take a lot of shit to keep me away line better than Something in the Air. That's why I do it twice instead of just once. So you wanted me to do a Steve Earle song, is that right?
That would be great if you could do a Steve Earle song for us.
I was born by the railroad tracks, where the train whistle wailed and I wailed right back. Well, Papa left Mama when I was quite young.
He said, now one of these days you're gonna follow me, son. There's a lot of personal relevance in that song. I played that song for my dad one time. I said, remember when I told you I fucked up with the girl that I was in love with? And he said, yeah. I said, here, let's listen to this song. And we did. So, I like that song a lot.
I like that song a lot, too. It's actually, I think it's a really underrated Steve Earle song for me. It's one of those things that it's not something I choose to listen to. And then, you know, when you have the iPod on shuffle or whatever, and it comes up, and I'm like, oh my god, this is such a great song. Why am I not always listening to this?
I think it's the production on those albums. You know,
people say that, and really it's a valid criticism. I mean, to try, like the hard. Y'all listen to The Hard Way?
Yeah.
You know the album he released right before he went to jail?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, that's like uber. That's uber schlock rock 80s
it's
production.
One of the ones you really don't like.
Okay.
But it's great, though. No, I mean, like, the songs on it are just, like, so fucking good. I mean, this...
And when you hear him...
He's staring down at death. He's thinking. He's,
and he knows
I don't know what he was thinking, but, I mean, like, the songs are all about just, like... I mean, it's about, like, you know... he's given up. Like, the moment where you give up.
But when you see him now, like, and he pulls out one of those songs and does them live, it's, like, way more intense and incredible than the actual, like, production on that album.
Although, I gotta say...
That's like the Copperhead Road cover on that Live at the Bluebird.
Right.
Which is amazing, right? It's amazing. It's yeah. Have you heard that album?
Yeah.
With Guy Clark.
With Townsend Guy.
Yeah. And it's like, and that song is really fantastic. You know, but the thing is that...
I think Copperhead Road is a fantastic album. I mean, like, I can get past the... I personally can get past the production because it's where he... I mean, like, I'm not talking about the production was where he was at that point in time, but, like...
Just the him, era that it was made in and what he was doing.
The songs he wrote and him singing, too. You can do whatever you want to his vocals, and but digital or analog or whatever, I mean, like, the man was still there, and he was sitting there singing, and, like... When he sings Other Kind on Hardway, and he says, I'm still my daddy's worst fears realized. I'm still the apple of my mother's eye. I'm still my daddy's worst fears realized. That's, like, the best line ever, man. Are you kidding me? Like, it's coming to me, me being me and listening to that song, I mean, that's, like, the best line I've ever heard. Because... I am the apple of my mom's eye, and I am the scariest person to my father. I'm also, like, my dad's hero, and my dad is my hero. You know what I mean? It's all, like, intertwined. Like, I scare the shit out of my parents, but you're so proud of me. I mean, that's, like, a brilliant line. And it's covered up with a bunch of 80s bullshit production, but I don't care. I don't care. Like, I can still listen to it.
That's how I feel a lot about that old Steve Morrow stuff. It just, like,
exactly. Sweet. All right, so this is Mimi.
Hey, so we're really glad you could be here with us tonight, Wes.
I'm really glad I was able to come over too.
Signing out. Thanks for having a rainy Nashville night with us.
Absolutely.
I think y'all will be hearing from Wes a lot more in the future.
Yep.
So, good night, everybody.
See you later, hardcore troubadour.
Wes is drunk. Bye, guys.
As happens to everyone that comes to our house. With that, we'll just...